welcome to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV, still the voice of the voiceless. This is the big conversation. It's the great debate, but it could only be a debate if you join in. That's why, above all, I need your telephone calls on 44208601455. You call us, we'll call you back, establish a clear line. And remember, if you get on the television with me, then the volume on your television has to be down at zero, or no one will understand either of us. You can also SMS the show on 44780008066, or you can email us at comment@presstv.co.uk. Now, you may recall a couple of weeks ago, I asked a question of the Prime Minister, David Cameron, at Prime Minister's Question Time in the House of Commons in London. I was seeking an answer about the key differences between the Al-Qaeda that we are killing in Mali and the Al-Qaeda that we are supporting in Syria. Answer came there none, just an ad hominem attack, which was in fact a classic case of projection. The sins and indeed crimes of the Prime Minister he sought to project onto me. He accused me of backing brutal Arab dictators when, of course, the whole world knows that it's the British state and the British Prime Minister that habitually backs brutal Arab dictators, not just backs them, but gives them the guns with which to be brutal. Well, in response to the Prime Minister's non-response, I managed to get myself a debate on Britain's relations with the Arab world. It took place in Parliament this week. Here's just a very small taster. I asked the Prime Minister if he would adumbrate for the House the key differences, just the key ones, the key differences between the hand-chopping, throat-cutting, violent Islamist extremist jihadists we were now going to go to Mali to kill, and the hand-chopping, throat-cutting, violent Islamist fanatic extremist jihadists that we were giving money to in order to help them kill Christians and other religious minorities in Syria. There was a reply, but it was not an answer. It was a brief ad hominem attack that if there is a brutal Arab dictator anywhere in the world left standing, he could no doubt count on support from me. I went on to make the point that, of course, it's the British Prime Minister David Cameron who's forever perambulating around the Arab world with his sales bag and his retinue of weapons traders to sell the weapons to the brutal Arab dictators with which they repress their own people, or in the case of so-called Saudi Arabia, in fact, invade other countries and kill their people for the crime of asking for democratic rights. I prayed in aid the Saudi invasion of Bahrain, the British military training mission in Saudi Arabia that's training the Saudi forces to send them into Bahrain to kill the democracy protesters there. I pointed out that fighter bombers that we sold to Saudi Arabia were used to kill hundreds, possibly thousands of Yemenis in the last days of the previous dictatorship of Yemen, of Ali Abdullah Saleh. I made the point that the brute dictators like Ben Ali in Tunisia, like Mubarak in Egypt, could count on the support of the British Prime Minister until, in one case, they were on the aeroplane, on the tarmac, taking off with their ill-gotten gains, fleeing the wrath of their people moments from being toppled, or in the case of Mubarak, until he was actually carted off to prison. The British Prime Minister was continuing to support him, as was his predecessor, the far from honourable Tony Blair. It was a remarkable debate. I commend it to you. The full version, of course, can be found in many places, YouTube and elsewhere, or you can read about it in Hansard on the parliamentary website. It was remarkable because, frankly, the minister, who's not a bad sort, actually, as a person, had nothing to say. He had nothing to say about the extraordinary, grotesque paradox that Iran is sanctioned when it doesn't have nuclear weapons, whilst Israel threatens to attack Iran even though Israel has hundreds of nuclear weapons, undeclared, illegally acquired, subject to no treaty, no inspection of any kind. Israel is not sanctioned. It's endlessly rewarded. Iran, who has no weapons, is endlessly sanctioned by contrast. He had no answer to the total failure to sanction Israel for its crimes. Indeed, how could he? Because one of the qualifications for being the Minister for the Middle East in the British Foreign Office is to be a luminary of the Friends of Israel, as the minister previously was, and as virtually every single minister in the 25 years that I have spent in Parliament has been. And above all, he made a very damaging admission. When asked, "Can you guarantee that none of the millions of taxpayers' pounds that the British government is giving to the so-called opposition in Syria is finding its way into the hands of Al-Qaeda jihadists who are using it to go around the country blowing up other people's mosques of which they disapprove, churches of which they disapprove, killing Christians, killing Kurdish people, killing Shiites, killing minorities of all kind? Can you guarantee," he was asked, "that no British money is being used by Al-Qaeda to commit these crimes?" And his answer was that he could not guarantee it. You would think that that was big news, but it didn't make it onto any of the British news. Unlike another small video of mine, this one only 30 seconds long, it was the now famous, more than 100,000 YouTube hits in 4 days, the now famous walkout from Christchurch College at Oxford University. Take a look at it.
We wanted peace, we got war, we mustn't make the same mistake again. So my first point, only a peace treaty can provide a framework for enduring peace and security. I'm sorry, Mr. Galloway?
You said we. Are you an Israeli?
I am, yes.
I don't debate with Israelis. I've been misled. Sorry.
What?
Racism?
I don't recognize Israel, and I don't debate with Israelis.
In the birth. He's a Brit. He's a human being.
Well, that was me and my good lady wife walking out in a rather dignified way, I thought. It was described variously in the gutter media in Britain as storming out, in which case most of us must storm out of our houses every morning. It was a dignified walkout. I had been misled. I was not told that I would be debating with an Israeli. It's an extremely important and significant point. I don't debate with Israelis any more than I buy Israeli tomatoes, at least knowingly. I did by mistake in Waitrose, the supermarket, this week. And I've been wondering why an ethical trader like Waitrose is selling Israeli tomatoes. Of course, I had to put the tomatoes into the dustbin because I don't buy Israeli tomatoes and I don't normalize anything about Israel. And that includes providing platforms for young Israelis of military age. Who knows, he may even have been a part of the Israeli armed forces. For all I know, if he's not been, he soon will be, because all Israeli citizens are potentially members of the Israeli armed forces. So I'm not ready to give platforms to such people. I'm ready, of course, to debate with Jews. I'm ready to debate with any other supporter of Israel, as I did last night at King's College London, and soundly defeated the pro-Israel spokesman when the vote came. The irony is, if I had spoken with that Israeli at the University of Oxford, virtually no one would have known about it. But it's now been in Time magazine, on CNN, it's been reported in Japan, in Israel, in Palestine, all over the world. They're talking about me walking out of a debate at Oxford, which means it was quite an achievement because it has placed firmly on the agenda just what boycott means, just what a refusal to normalize relationships with Israel means. Gary from Halifax in Nova Scotia in Canada, he's a wise man. He knows all about what it means. and he's on the line now. Gary, welcome back to the show, my friend.
Good evening, George.
Great to hear from you. Go ahead.
Well, this your activity was it was kind of like the straw that broke the latest camel's back.
I think so, yeah.
In the sense that people have been talking about boycott from a number of directions, as you've alluded, without really showing by actions what it means. And, you know, we have the experience in this country that, you know, there's an attitude about that Canada has had a midway position between Palestinians and their concerns and the concerns of what I call the state of Zionesia. But when you investigate, you see that the actions have not been midway at all. Canadian governments, actually starting from 1919, the government of Sir Robert Borden, actually proposed that there be a mandate over Palestine, but that it not be given to the British, it be given to Washington. And the only reason we know about it is not from Robert Borden's memoirs. It was all chopped out of his papers. It's only because Lloyd George wrote about it in the 1930s in volume 2 of his memoirs. Other than that, it's disappeared. Similarly, Canada played a very, very sleazy and dirty role right at the time of setting up what was called the UN Special Committee on Palestine, which recommended the partitioning of Palestine to insert this so-called Jewish state there. Canada's role was supposed to be, was a member of this committee. It was not supposed to have a bias. Mm. It spent hour after hour in the meetings of that committee imposing the American agenda plan for this Zionist state. And the man who did it had absolutely impeccable credentials. You couldn't criticize him. He was the former Chief Justice of the Canadian Supreme Court. His name was Ivan Rand. He came up with something called the Rand Formula. This was the salvation of the labor movement in Canadian industry at the time. This provided for the automatic dues checkoff. So you couldn't debate with these people because they had insulated themselves this way, so that they could give this kind of priority to the setup of the Zionesian state. Now, you mention, and I watched the thing on YouTube, how every individual in the position of the FCO in England has always been a firm friend of Zionesia, and it's like known in advance. And this is actually a qualification to be in that position. This means the question of boycott as action is very important, because it's only when you take actions such as yours at Oxford that it's suddenly a wake-up slap in the face to a lot of people who hadn't really thought about what that means. Now, the Palestinians themselves, their attitude, you can see very clearly, they have demanded their land back. They have gone through all the legal norms to get their land back, and now we see actions on the ground in the West Bank, for example, these young people who just set up camp, and they dare the Israeli army to throw them off. And, of course, everybody knows the Israeli army is going to come, but the point is made that this coming generation and their children and their children's children will still be doing this if necessary.
That's it, Gary. You're right. I'd love to talk to you all night. You make some very, very powerful points. Follow Gary in Halifax on Facebook, if you will. It's very much worth the trouble. Action speaks louder than words, Gary. And words are important, but actions are even more important. And I'm grateful for your support on that. Ahmed's on the line from Iran, on the subject of Al-Qaeda, the Al-Qaeda that Britain and America are giving millions of dollars to in Syria, as they once gave millions tens, hundreds of millions of dollars to in Afghanistan. Ahmed, welcome to the show, my friend.
Okay. Hello, dear Jordan. Good night.
Well, good evening to you. Go ahead, sir.
Okay, first thing first is that let me congratulate you for your move and the clip that you played a couple of minutes ago. And let me tell you that these movements, these actions will find their ways in the history of mankind during this century. I mean, these actions will not be forget by us, by many other Muslims and many other humans all around the world.
Thank you.
I really congratulate you.
Thank you, sir.
But, dear George, about the topic of Al-Qaeda, I want to start with another version of political Islam, which started its way 34 years ago. And that version of political Islam is the version of the Islamic Republic of Iraq. You know that when the Islamic Revolution took place 30 years ago, more than 30 years ago in my country, in Iran, there was a huge mountain of problems and obstacles ahead of our way, the Iranian Muslim nation. But we have approximately overcome all of those problems, and today we are developing a fast-developing country. We're the first Muslim nation sending a satellite into orbit. We're the first Muslim nation mastering peaceful nuclear technology. And according to the Nature Journal, the rate of the growth of science in Iran in 2012 was number one among the whole Muslim countries in the world. But the point is that when these achievements started to come for the Iranian nation as a Muslim nation, as the first version of political Islam, the cruel powers of the world decided to create, arm, and support a fake version of this political Islam, which today we know it as Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda is the very tool that the bosses of the world use them wherever this tool can serve and protect their interests. So my strong recommendation for all Muslims on this planet is to practice the political Islam, but not the counterfeit version of Al-Qaeda. Let's see what Al-Qaeda has done to Afghanistan, Mali, and Iraq, and Syria. Definitely, there is no doubt that the number one guilt for this situation goes for the Americans, for the French, for the Britain, and etc. But we cannot ignore the role of this group as the false copy of political Islam in this matter.
Well, that's a very powerful set of points, Ahmed. Let me respond to them, if I may. I've oftentimes said that the question of who Al-Qaeda now is and for whom Al-Qaeda is now working is very much an open one and a very suspicious one. The question of who founded Al-Qaeda, who funded Al-Qaeda, who gave Al-Qaeda its first role in the world is not an open question. It's a very closed one and a clear one. It was the United States of America and Great Britain, using their stooges, then in the Middle East, the dictatorship of Sadat and the money of the House of Al Saud, they used the money and the wherewithal of both of these countries to send what became known as Al-Qaeda to Afghanistan. They did so on the deeply immoral principle that my enemy's enemy is my friend, and they wanted to weaken their enemy, the then Soviet Union. That's how Al-Qaeda came to be. So the question of its genesis is not open to argument. It's very clear. Its birthplace was in the crucible created by American and British and other Western support for the so-called Mujahideen in Afghanistan at that time. The question of what Al-Qaeda is or became is more troublesome. Al-Qaeda and its mindset killed thousands of Americans in the Twin Towers in New York on 9/11/2001. At the same time, Al-Qaeda has been rehired by Britain and America, first in Libya and now in Syria. The second point I want to make is this. I'm not in any sense saying, and I have never said, that all the people who are against the government in Syria, even all the people who are fighting against the government in Syria, are Al-Qaeda. But Al-Qaeda are calling the shots in the so-called revolution in Syria. Of that there is no doubt, and you can read it regularly in the New York Times, you can read it in the briefings of the State Department, of the British think tanks, and so on. The serious journalists like Robert Fisk in the Independent newspaper, and so on. There's no doubt about it. The main cutting edge of the so-called revolutionary forces in Syria is Al-Qaeda and its affiliates. And I'm asking why Britain and America are supporting Al-Qaeda and its affiliates in Syria whilst killing them in Mali. It's not quite clear yet why one and not the other, why not both, but I dare say truth will out. Ahmed, thanks for that. Great call. Very, very clear line for a change from Iran. Adam's on the line in London. He wants to talk about Al-Qaeda. Adam, welcome back.
Thank you very much, George.
Good to hear your voice. Go ahead.
Analysis. You almost took all the wind from my sail by spot on. We know the role that United States under the president of Reagan and the Congress did in the Afghanistan when they did not want the Soviet Union to take control of the Central Asia. The same thing they did in Africa, supporting Mobutu to terrorize people of Congo. Al-Qaeda was formed by the United States of America when they imported the hardliners Muslims from the Saudi Arabia to come into Afghanistan and sponsored them together with the together with Pakistani military. After they used them, what they should have done was they should have dissolved them, paid them off, and let them go. But they knew the diabolic idea that they had for that region. Therefore, they continuously sponsored the Al-Qaeda. Look at the operation in Libya. The Libyans did not want Gaddafi off. It was the trained American people who speak like you and I. I had this argument with you when they were doing it that this isn't an operation by the people of Libya. It was the Al-Qaeda, the hide groups of the United States of America, the United Kingdom, to go and foment trouble and cause mayhem in those regions. Now in Syria, Tony Blair said to us that we would never under any circumstance negotiate with terrorists. Now they are negotiating with terrorists to do their dirty job for them. But the caution is to Muslims who are sometimes becoming more stupid than they think they are clever. It is very dangerous for any Muslim country to be in bed with these people because they one day come and hunt you. My advice to my brothers, Muslims and sisters is let's be wise, be clever politically. We have to be matured. Let's take our destiny into our own hand. Fight our government. We shouldn't encourage external forces to come and join us to fight our fight for us.
Well, Adam, I was talking to someone today from Syria. I was talking to someone in London today, and he put it this way. The United States, Britain and France, using the money of Qatar and so-called Saudi Arabia, are bringing fanatics from all over the world, not just the Arab world, but from all over the world, from Pakistan, from England, from all the Arab countries, from Afghanistan, the people that were formerly fighting for Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, and they have brought them to what was a relatively harmonious, multi-religious, multi-faith, multi-ethnic country called Syria. Sure, Syria had many problems. It had problems, like all the Arab countries, of a lack of democracy and severe restrictions on human rights. But communities and religions and ethnicities lived shoulder to shoulder, side by side in Syria. Now the country has been torn apart and faces total destruction. Whose benefit has that been? To whose benefit is the destruction of the once citadel of Arab nationalism and Arabism and patriotism? Syria, the Syrian people, who have been a beacon for the Arabs for the best part of a century. To whose benefit? I think you know the answer, but I'll be continuing the debate, God willing, after the news, just a couple of minutes from now. Don't go away. Welcome back to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV, still the voice of the voiceless. Tonight we're looking at the US-UK relationship with what has become known as Al-Qaeda. And we're talking about what boycott actually means. What does it mean when you say you're refusing to normalize any relations with Israel? Did anyone think it was plain sailing? Did anyone think that you could make an omelette without breaking eggs? Well, they found out differently when me and my missus walked out of Oxford University. It's reverberated around the world. And of course, if we'd continued the debate with the Israeli who had been infiltrated into the debate without my knowledge, at least of the fact that he was an Israeli, if we'd had the debate, no one would ever have heard of it. By walking out, I think we performed a signal service. What's a boycott? What is refusal to normalize? And who are Al-Qaeda? It's all coming up over the next 25 minutes or so. I think that Hussein is on the line from Ireland, if I'm not wrong. These are, of course, my views, by the way. They're not Press TV's views, neither are they the views of any government. Hussein from Ireland's disappeared for the moment, but William in Yorkshire, he wants to talk about the walkout and what the meaning of boycott actually is. William, welcome.
Hello there, George. I think you'll know from my voice, this is William Hague.
It's the Foreign Minister of Britain on the line.
We haven't spoken in a while. Maybe
no, you were too frightened.
In a while, we would maybe bump into each other.
You were too frightened to show up for my debate in Parliament this week. You sent along a little Alistair Burt, your junior minister, instead.
Well, I couldn't attend. As you know, I'm the Foreign Secretary. But I notice you've been dyeing your beard recently, George.
Well, only a little bit.
Only a little bit. Is it just for men, maybe?
It's just for men, yes.
And a better, and a matter,
and a matter best kept private. Now, do you have anything to say in defence of your government's foreign policy? How about telling us why you're giving money to Al-Qaeda?
We are not giving any money to Al-Qaeda.
But you're giving money to people who are giving it to Al-Qaeda.
Well, that's not the same, is it?
I think it is. And your minister confirmed in the answer in my debate this week that he can give no guarantee that the money, the British taxpayers' money that's being given to the opposition in Syria, in defiance, by the way, of international law, it's a criminal offence to support armed rebellion in the territory of a member state of the United Nations. It's a criminal offence. Let me finish, William. This is my show, not yours. Your minister confirmed that you could not guarantee at all that the money that's being given to the opposition will not end up in the hands of these hand-chopping terrorists. Aren't you ashamed of that?
Are you ashamed of your track record in Parliament? You never show up to any votes.
Well, you say I never show up. You say I never show up, but I was the one that had the debate, and it was you who didn't show up. But a rather more important question than who turns up and who votes in Parliament is whether you're giving British taxpayers' money to the hand choppers of Al-Qaeda, and your minister says that he cannot guarantee, and you've just confirmed that the British government cannot guarantee that that is not happening. I would have thought that was a cause much more worthy of being ashamed of than whether I dye my beard. No one could accuse you of dyeing your hair, William, because, of course, you don't have any. Aidan is in London. He wants to talk about Israel. Aidan, welcome to the show.
Hi, Joe.
Welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me back.
Welcome.
Just like I say, what a great show you've got. I enjoy watching it all the time, and I can't wait for Thursday's 7 o'clock.
It's just, thanks, Aidan. I appreciate that.
I mean, it's very hard to find a decent program. Now, after watching Press TV, it's very difficult to just switch on the mainstream TV and start watching programs like this again.
It's a parallel universe, Aidan. If you watch the news on Sky and then watch half an hour later, watch the news on Press TV covering the same events, but you would think there was a parallel universe going on.
I mean, I used to watch Channel 4 to get a little bit of truth, but I don't even watch that anymore because
no,
that's a joke as well.
Neither
now,
do I. So. Neither do I.
Yeah.
They're all falsifiers.
No, it's a joke. You can't watch mainstream TV after you watch press TV because no. It's like watching press TV is like you get it. It's what you want to hear. It's what you want the truth.
You know the old song, Aidan. How they're going to keep them down on the farm after they've seen Paris? Well, after you've seen press TV, why would you want to go back to the Bush and Blair Corporation? Anyway, no, I'm interrupting you. Go ahead.
Yeah. It's about the Al-Qaeda question that you presented to the Parliament this week.
Yeah.
I'd just like the Al-Qaeda of Syria is a branch of the Saudi Mossad CIA-backed mercenary forces, which is subcontracting the foreign policies of these respective countries. I mean, the Al-Qaeda of Mali is an independent fighting force who are trying to get their own homeland and are not dependent on Western sequence services for weapons to defend themselves, because they have their own weapons left over from Gaddafi's army. That's like what I think the difference is between the Al-Qaeda of Syria and the Al-Qaeda of Mali. But the reason why the Al-Qaeda are being backed by the Mossad, CIA, Saudi regimes is because the Al-Qaeda are seasoned war veterans, and they're a much more effective fighting force that are able to challenge the Assad dictatorship. The other rebels in Syria are recent volunteers who have taken up arms to fight for their freedom. They have no experience of fighting, and they're not capable of defeating the Assad military, you know, who are armed to the teeth, better trained, and, you know, they can handle the fighting, the rebels in Syria, but they can't handle these Al-Qaeda, these nasty sort of war veterans, because they're, like, seasoned war veterans who have got a lot more fighting experience. That's why they're getting backed by the Western powers, because the indigenous uprising in Syria, they're just like students, you know, unemployed. They're like the people that have had a bad time under Assad.
Well, you're right. I did say earlier, I'm not alleging at all that everyone who's against the Assad government in Syria is Al-Qaeda. Far from it. Neither am I even saying that everyone fighting the Assad government in Syria is Al-Qaeda. But as you yourself have properly analysed, that would not be enough to overthrow the government of Syria. And that's why Saudi Arabia and Qatar and Britain and France and Israel and the United States have rehired Al-Qaeda in order to bring about the end result that they seek, which is the destruction of Syria as a country, the destruction of the Assad regime in Damascus. Why? Not because it's a dictatorship. They love dictatorships. All the dictatorships in the Arab world are their best friends. Not because it has one family rule, because, hey, all their friends are one family rule. Every single minister in the government in Kuwait has the same family name. Saudi Arabia even gave the family name to the name of the country. So they're not against Syria for that reason. They're against Syria for three reasons, Aidan. First of all, because Syria will not surrender and recognize Israel, will not normalize relationships with Israel. And secondly, because it will not expel the Palestinian resistance from Damascus, even though some of the Palestinian resistance has now left and gone to Qatar. And thirdly, because they will not cut their support for the Lebanese resistance, which is the only Arab army that ever inflicted a defeat upon the Zionist state, and by extension will not break its relations with the Islamic Republic of Iran. That's the long and the short of it. This is a proxy war against Iran because they cannot fight Iran. They cannot and will not fight Iran. So the poor people of Syria are being mutilated and massacred as a substitute, as a proxy. How tragic is that? Aidan, thanks. I've got a caller from Saudi Arabia. His name is Mohammed, and he wants to talk about Al-Qaeda. Mohammed, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hey, George. Thanks for having me on your program.
You're welcome. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I actually tweeted you to the program asking you who are the Al-Qaeda in Syria.
Yeah, all you've got to do is Google it. They're quite open about it. These organizations who form a part of the Al-Qaeda mindset, who are loyal to the worldview of Osama bin Laden, who fought previously in Libya, fought previously in Afghanistan and are now killing religious minorities and ethnic minorities in Syria. You don't have to be a rocket science to work it out. And I know that in Saudi Arabia, you have access to the information. Indeed, it's the money from Saudi Arabia that's paying their wages. Go on, Mohammed.
Yeah, actually, I'm from England. I'm just residing in Saudi Arabia, and I respect you a lot on your Palestinian issues.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think you really know what's happening in Syria in terms of the so-called Shabiha of Iran in Syria, the Alawites being backed by Iran.
Mm. Go on. Tell us about them.
I mean, I'd like you to tell me and others.
No. You're the one making the allegations. So go ahead. Don't think we'll stop. Don't imagine that we'll stop you. But don't imagine that I won't answer you either. Go ahead, Mohammed.
No. Like I said, George, I respect you a lot, and I know you'll speak the truth.
Well, go
and
ahead.
That's why I'm asking. I'm just saying, answering in the same way. Google it. I mean, the Western press, if you ask me to Google, all saying Al-Qaeda are in Syria. And the same Western press are saying that the Syrian Iranian-backed Shabihas, Iranian-backed Alawites...
Well, look. You can take your pick, Mohammed. These Shabiha are not Iranians, they're Syrians. These Alawites are not Iranians, they're Syrians. They're fighting in their own country to defend what they think is right in their own country. They didn't invade Saudi Arabia. They haven't invaded Bahrain. They haven't invaded anybody. They're fighting as Syrians in Syria. Now, every country has a right to rise up and seek to overthrow its government. But don't throw words like Iranian-backed here, because you can take your pick, Mohammed. I'd rather be Iranian-backed than Israeli-backed, wouldn't you? I'd rather be Iranian-backed than American-backed, wouldn't you? I'd rather be Iranian-backed rather than British and French colonialist-backed, wouldn't you, Mohammed?
Absolutely. I'm with you, George. But the thing is, like you said, it's a Syrian war, and you told me to refer back to Google, referring me to Western media. The same Western media are saying that the Free Syrian Army have caught Iranian Shabihas, Iranian soldiers.
Well, Mohammed, let's call a spade a spade. There is a civil conflict in Syria. It was very badly mishandled, as President Assad has conceded. It was very badly mishandled by the Syrian regime. It could have and should have been handled entirely differently. It escalated into military conflict. And the imperialist powers, using the money of Qatar and the country in which you are speaking, Saudi Arabia, was used to send every violent, hand-chopping, throat-cutting, Al-Qaeda-type jihadist that was recruitable in the world, from all over the world, to invade Syria through Turkey and to try and bring about the destruction of Syria as a country. Now, I'm very clear where I stand on that. Very clear indeed. I'm against the destruction of Syria. I'm against Al-Qaeda. And I'm against my own country giving them money. Mohammed, thanks for the call and thanks for your kind words. Now, let's talk to Top in South Africa on Al-Qaeda. Top, welcome to the show.
Hello, sir.
Yes, welcome. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, thank you very much for the program. I'm a first time and yet a great listener. I want to talk about the two differences between you and me as far as Al-Qaeda is concerned.
Go ahead.
Yeah. The first difference is that you believe that Al-Qaeda bombed the Twin Towers independently. I don't believe so myself. I believe they were manipulated. They were assisted by the CIA and Mossad to do that dirty job in order to justify the war in Iraq. That's the first difference. The second difference between me and you again is it seems you have no problem with Al-Qaeda in Mali.
But I do. You're totally wrong. No, let me stop you there. You're totally wrong about that. I don't support Al-Qaeda in Mali or anywhere else in the world. I'm just questioning the hypocrisy of killing Al-Qaeda in Mali and giving guns and money to Al-Qaeda in Syria, that's all.
Okay. Well, if that is, if that is the case, then I only have one difference with you, whereby I think you believe Al-Qaeda independently bombed the Twin Towers. I maintain that they were manipulated because Al-Qaeda...
We're not going to solve that question now, and neither are we debating who did what on 9/11. You'll have your views. I have mine. I have adumbrated mine many, many times. You can go to YouTube and check. Trolls is on the line from Copenhagen in Denmark on the issue of boycott. What is boycotting Israel? What does it actually mean? Trolls, welcome.
Thank you very much. Yes, it's great to be on the show again.
Thanks.
I really need to expand my fantasy and my ideas on how to boycott Israel. Every time I go shopping, I boycott Israel by just avoiding all the Israeli products wherever I can. And now with your action, boycotting this Israeli maybe soldier or citizen and not talking with him, you've given me more inspiration and ideas to how maybe I can imitate you.
Well, you're welcome.
Wherever that might be, wherever
it's
that
a
might be possible.
Serious form of flattery. Go ahead.
So these boycotts, I'm looking for more ideas and on that. And I also wanted to mention that we should do everything we can to not have the world, the parts of the world, the West, boycotting and sanctioning Iran. It's extremely important that Iran gets its message out and it stays and is able to have a freedom of speech on these satellites broadcasting from Iran that are now being put off the air one after another.
Yeah.
It's horrible. It's horrible. This, we must stop that. But can you tell me or anybody else that Iran has successfully put some satellites into outer space? Isn't that right?
Well, I heard that said earlier by the caller from Tehran. But like you, that got me to wondering, if Iran has satellites, how come we're dependent on people who are cutting us off the airwaves around the world? So we'll have to investigate that point further, Trolls.
And then there's a last comment from me, if I may.
Yeah.
And that is that the monetary transactions to and from Iran, these are also being especially sanctioned. I'm wondering if there's an option open. For example, WikiLeaks has been also boycotted by MasterCard and others.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, WikiLeaks has successfully opened up and can transfer money around these boycotts. And if WikiLeaks can do it, and it's not just this Bitcoin for nerds and experts in doing these things, it's also currencies, the dollar and mm-hmm. The euro, mm-hmm. can also be used.
Well, okay, Trolls, I'm sure they heard you in Tehran. And maybe we could get an answer on the first point. The second point is, of course, their own business. But thanks very much indeed for the advice. Walters is also in Scandinavia, in Norway. He also wants to talk about Al-Qaeda. Walters, welcome to the show.
The second point is, of course, their own business.
Yes,
yes, turn the television down, brother. Go ahead.
Yes, it's Walters from Norway. I would like to talk about Al-Qaeda. And I think that, like you said, Al-Qaeda has been a springboard for many things around the world. I think that when we talk about Al-Qaeda, we should limit Al-Qaeda to where Al-Qaeda is supposed to be, because I will give you a short example. In 2003, when the guys, the Delta guys in Nigeria, were reivindicating for their government to be able to look into their problem, to be able to provide them with social amenities, schools, hospitals, and jobs, and to be able to restore their villages that the government destroyed as a result of oil exploitation, ABC News and other mainstream media painted them as Al-Qaeda linked and started using an agenda that is used for addressing Al-Qaeda. So I think that most of the Al-Qaeda branches that are being announced around the world by the mainstream media are created.
Well, I think that's a fair point. And in Mali, those fighting against the military dictatorship in Mali, which is now, of course, backed by the British and French governments, those fighting it, say, many of them say they're nothing to do with Al-Qaeda. So that's a very good point that you make. In fact, there is Al-Qaeda in Mali. There are also other Islamists, and there are Tuaregs and other refugees from the Gaddafi war and so on. So it's a very good point, Walters. We must have a discriminating eye on the subject of who and what is Al-Qaeda. Let's take the next caller. I can't quite see who it is, but I'm determined to get at least one more caller on the line. They've hung up, so let me talk whilst I'm waiting on the last caller. Al-Qaeda was born as a result of the actions of Britain, the United States, Saudi Arabia, and Egypt. This much is beyond question. There was a war in Afghanistan. The so-called Arab Afghans were transported from Saudi Arabia and elsewhere into Afghanistan to do the West's dirty work. Ghulam is in South Africa, and he's on the line, wants to talk about this very subject. But I've only got 2 minutes left. Ghulam, welcome, sir. Go ahead quickly.
Hello, George.
Yes, go ahead.
Talking to you, and your show is always exciting.
Thank you, sir.
George, before I quickly go on to the Al-Qaeda, and I'm quite cognizant of your time,
yeah.
Is that I'd like you to know in South Africa we discuss about your show regularly.
Thank
so you may not have that amount of phone calls from South Africa, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we are not watching your show.
Thank you, sir.
So I'd like you to know that we're very much aligned to the hypocrisy of the West in terms of Syria and the actions of Al-Qaeda in Mali. And we really thank you for that, and I'm sure you're running out of time, so I'll find another slot the next time to call in.
Ghulam, I'm coming to South Africa in May, by the grace of God, and if God wills it, I'll be chairing a conference on Israel, the apartheid state, in South Africa, in Durban, in May. You can follow me on Facebook and on Twitter to keep abreast of that. A big salute to all my friends in South Africa, a country I've been associated with for a very, very long time and which knows a thing or two about apartheid. I had a great victory at King's College London on the subject of the apartheid racist state of Israel in a debate just this week. The previous week, I had an even bigger victory by leaving a debate on the subject of the racist apartheid state of Israel. And by the grace of God, I've been able to talk to you about it tonight. I hope I've made it clear. No normalization, boycott, divestment, sanctions against the racist apartheid state. That is the policy that should be followed by all right-thinking people in relationship to so-called Israel. God willing, I'll be back next week.
Hello, just comment your name and the number. And just make sure that your television volume is set to zero.
Zero. Can you spell your name for me?
Yeah, I know. You'll be directly put through this. Your phone number, and then we'll be back. Comment.
Can I be on?